Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
So the other day, I'm sitting there hoping, keeping my fingers crossed, that the Cavaliers get a little luck in the lottery. My old phrase, apbith, another ping pong ball in the hopper. The more you have in the hopper, the better your chances are of maybe getting the number one overall pick, or in this case, just making sure you're in the top five, because that's where there's a drop-off, according to most people who cover basketball, right? And so the Cavaliers were sitting at five. If one team leapfrogged them, okay, then that meant they would have been on the outside looking in. Well, the Cavaliers got some luck, and they finished third in the draft lottery, meaning they will have the third overall pick in right. the July 29th draft behind Detroit, who has the first pick, Houston, who has the second pick.
What was your prediction that night? Before we signed off, I predicted we would pick at number two. Do you remember what your prediction was?
I went four. Yeah, okay. I went four. So it was right between that, right? So I'm happy that they're in the top four. Number two would have been nice because then I could have got Jalen Green no matter what, because nobody could pick him unless the first team did. But now we'll see if that's the guy I want if he falls to number three. And to talk more about the draft lottery and the draft position of the Cavs and the team's needs and whatnot, let's go to the Wake'em Way hotline and bring in the outstanding radio voice of your Cleveland Cavaliers. Follow him on Twitter at Cavs Alcorn. He is Tim Alcorn. What's up, Toots?
Hey, man, good to talk to you. It's been a while, so it's great to be with the best pick-and-roll combination since Stockton and Malone.
Attaway, what are you doing in the off season now, kid?
Well, I had to come inside to talk to you guys.
So that means a lot of yard work is what's going on out there, right, Tim Alcorn?
Tim.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
We talked to J. Mike a couple of years ago. I'll never forget it. He goes, guys, thank God you have me on your show today. My wife had me up on a ladder. I'm cleaning out gutters. I'm doing all this crap. Please, let's talk some basketball. So have at it, man.
So how Absolutely. Excited were you the other night, Tim, as you're watching that? And, they could have picked anywhere from 1 to 9, depending on how the ping pong balls fell, right? They end up number 3. Give me your thoughts as you're watching it.
Well, first of all, I'm glad there wasn't a live webcam in my family room, because I'm jumping up and down and I'm waving my arms. That commercial break seemed like forever when they were coming back to reveal the top four. But Kenny and JT, you both made the point. Everybody seems to think it's a top four, maybe a top five draft as far as elite franchise playing players are concerned. So, boy, the Cavs, their rebuild accelerated quickly after that draft lottery. It was great news.
Yeah, it was. As I was watching it, I'm sitting there thinking, just get me in the top four. Just get me in the top four, right? And then when they said, oh, the Cavaliers have catapulted or moved up, so they're at least in the top four, I was like, cool. Then I got greedy, Tim. Then I'm thinking, man, get me that number one pick, man. I want that number one pick for what, the fifth or sixth time in franchise history, the most of any NBA team. But I'll be okay with number three, Tim, because I'm thinking I'm getting either Evan Mobley or Jalen Green. Do you have a preference of the guys that are in that top five who you'd like to see them take?
I don't necessarily have a preference, because I think the Cavs can certainly use no matter who's available at that spot. You look at Evan Mobley, and certainly he's a big guy, but with some athletic skill. I mean, he was really impressive at USC. And, of course, you talked earlier about Jalen Green. I mean, this young man can play, and what he did in the G League the last year really opened up some eyes. So, and again, he fills the need as far as that athletic wing player that the Cavs have been talking about for the last couple of years. So whether it's him or whether it's Green or Mobley, I think they'll do well either way.
You know, the nice thing about this draft is, and not to make light of it, but you really hit the lottery. And when you think about it, 2017, you don't have a lottery pick. You don't have a first-rounder. But you end up with a first-rounder because you get the number 22 pick in the deal you made to bring in Jared Allen. So the nucleus looking pretty darn good. 17, Allen. 18, you go with Colin Sexton at number 8. 19, Darius Garland at 5. Isaac Okoro at number 5. Tim, this is a pretty decent-looking nucleus.
Yeah, we've talked about this, JT, and certainly that young core, they talk about the core four with Sexton, Allen, and, of course, Darius Garland and Okoro. And you're right. Those four players are certainly the nucleus that this team is going to build around. And when you add a real valuable piece now with this number three pick, no matter who they select or if they elect to move out of there, and they're going to have a lot of teams that are going to be dialing up Kobe Altman to say what's it going to take. So they've got some options, and certainly none of them are bad options. It will only make them a better basketball team come next year.
Tim, it makes us wonder, what would it take?
What would it take? Well, believe me, I'm not sitting here in Kobe Altman's chair right now, but... But, you know, as he said, when they had the media conference with him after the lottery on Tuesday, and as we've just talked about, this draft appears to be a draft where the top four, maybe five players are elite players. Mm. So if you're going to give up a pick, if you're holding that chip that's going to bring to you or somebody else an elite player, you better get an elite package back. And so Kobe's holding that chip right now, and really, he owes it to himself. He owes it to the organization to listen to the phone calls. Now, he may elect to hang up pretty quickly or at least take part in the conversation, but his phone will be ringing between now and July 29th.
Tim Alcorn, our guest via the Wake 'Em Way Hotline, radio voice of the Cavaliers. Follow him on Twitter at Cavs Alcorn. Tim, as you now have had some time to decompress, relax, sit back, and think back on this past season, to me, a disappointment, but in listening to Kobe Altman with his year-end press conference, and I told JT this earlier, and let me get my notes out so I read it correctly, all right? It was more about getting experience. He said, we really never put a playoff emphasis on this past season. It was about evaluating talent. So with that in mind, how would you evaluate, looking back now, the season, some of the players that stood out to you?
Oh, well, first and foremost, Kenny and JT, the guy that stood out the most as far as accelerated progress was Darius Garland. The step he took from year one to year two was simply just tremendous. He really picked up his game. He had an up-and-down rookie season, had some real rough moments, and we've talked about why that was the case coming off the injury, had only played four games in college, but in his second year, boy, you could see how special he can be. He's got an incredible ceiling, and I thought there were times last year that Darius Garland was the best player on the floor for the Cavaliers. I also think, and you alluded to it earlier, JT, number five pick last year, Isaac Okoro, when he was drafted out of Auburn, everybody said, defensively, he's ready, and JB threw him into that mix every night. He got the other team's best offensive player from LeBron to Kawhi to Pascal Siakam. I mean, you name it, and it was Isaac Okoro that was guarding him. And then I thought his offensive game really picked up in the last third of the season, so a lot of promise there. And I also think, guys, as you analyze the season, I think you have to look at it almost pre-Jared Allen and post-Jared
yep.
Allen, because once that deal was made, now you've got the 22-year-old young center that you're looking to build around as far as that centerpiece in the post. So, and Jared Allen's progress certainly was there, and he showed why he's going to be commanding a huge contract as a restricted free agent, but, you know, the Cavs certainly consider him, pardon the pun, a centerpiece as far as this rebuild is concerned. So, those three guys really stood out for me as far as the progress and just the ability to get better as their career goes on. And I guess the other thing that stood out was just how much of an injury-riddled season it was. This team and JB really never had the chance to show what they could do with a full roster.
Yep.
I mean, when you have 300 games missed in a 72-game schedule, I mean, you just never were able to put that full complement of players out there.
You kind of stole my thunder right there, because I was going to get to it and say injuries, condition, bad luck, or pandemic. What came into play more?
Wow, that's a great question. And perhaps...
Yes. How about this? The answer is
yes,
Tim.
All of the above?
Well, they all affect one another. They really do, because if you think about the pandemic and that shortened schedule, and there were a lot of NBA guys that said, listen, our bodies may not be up to 72 games within a condensed period of time. And, boy, just look at the playoffs this year and how many all-star caliber players have missed some or a lot of games. And also the late start where the Cavs weren't able to participate in the bubble. I mean, they went from mid-March to late December without playing a game, and that's a long time, especially for a young basketball team. So I think the injuries and the pandemic almost tie together somewhat. They're connected. And then bad luck, certainly. You know, the injuries, as I mentioned, that's just bad luck. You really can't help that, and it really hits some key players at critical times.
Think of that, Kenny. You go from one extreme to the other. Cavaliers didn't play for months. The Lakers had to go right back to work. Which is better?
Right.
I don't know. They both had injuries, right?
Yes. I mean, but I think it's two different reasons why you have injuries. And I'm not a medical guy, so don't say, Tim Alcorn medical expert, because I'm not. But I think the pandemic plays a factor in both.
I think
the fact that the Lakers didn't have that long recuperation, that long rest, that played a factor in their season. But I think the injuries with the Cavs may have, and I'm saying may have, been a factor because of the condensed schedule. So I think injuries played a factor in both the Lakers, and you can throw other teams in there as well, and the Cavs, but I think it was for two different reasons. You could have injuries because of a short layoff, but I think you had teams that had injuries because of that condensed schedule where you were playing so many games in a week.
Tim Alcorn, our guest via the Wake and Way Hotline. You heard him all season long right here on WHBC calling Cavs basketball. So, Tim, you know me, not one to shy away from asking questions to players, coaches, or managers, GMs, or whatever it is, right? So I threw it out there with Kobe, a year-end press conference, about being in the same boat as the Knicks, the Suns, and the Hawks 3 years ago, right? They had about the same amount of wins. And now those three teams made the playoffs this year. The Cavaliers did not. And Kobe said to me, and I'm paraphrasing now, the fair comp to that, to our team out of those three that you brought up, Kenny, was the Atlanta Hawks. So is it unfair for me to think that next year the Cavaliers should be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, Tim Alcorn?
Well, I hope you're recording this, Kenny, because if the Cavs are in the Eastern Conference Finals next year, we'll go back to June 23rd and we'll replay this interview. But, no, I don't know if the Cavs are putting a realistic goal as far as Eastern Conference Finals or playoffs. I think Kobe mentioned the other night that this team would like to be and certainly has their eyes on the playoffs, especially the way the draft lottery fell. But listen, Atlanta, keep in mind at the beginning of this year, was playing horrible basketball, and Nate McMillan really turned that thing around. I mean, it's amazing what Nate McMillan has done. But getting back to the Cavs, listen, as I said, I think now, the rebuild is going to be accelerated with the third pick, or if they elect to, do something with that valuable chip that they're holding in their hand right now. But I think they certainly have their eyes set on playing beyond the regular season. Absolutely.
Tim, a lot of our callers and a lot of people on social media offer and they wonder this question all along. The last couple of days, we heard that Kevin Love would be joining the Olympic team. Right or wrong, fair or not, what are your thoughts on Kevin Love? Because the main thing they say is this. He can't be healthy for the Cavaliers during this season, and why would he be when the team only wins 22 games? Whether or not, I'm not questioning whether or not he's hurt or not. I'm questioning, should he participate in the Olympics or not? What are your thoughts?
Well, that's a decision for Kevin Love. I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into that. I think his injuries this year were legit. And I think Kevin wants to kind of answer his own doubts as far as, because he mentioned at the end of the year, he was frustrated and he wants to play, and he wants to play at a level that people are used to seeing Kevin Love play at. So maybe he doesn't want to wait till September or October. It's not like he's going to Tokyo and he's going to play 35, 40 minutes a game. So perhaps there's, you know, a lingering question in Kevin Love's mind as far as, listen, am I where I want to be? Maybe not, you know, at his peak. He wants to be that when he's playing for the Cavaliers. But if he's got any lingering doubts, perhaps going to Tokyo and playing 10, 12 minutes a game will at least answer those for him. So I don't really question it. I don't think it's as big a deal as people are making of it. There's a lot of good basketball players that are going over to Tokyo. So, you know, it's pretty the load. He's going to be a part of that team. And listen, if we all sit here, you know, in a couple of weeks and watch Kevin Love tear it up in Tokyo and do well, we're going to say, all right, yeah, we're glad he went, because that's the guy we want to see.
Tim Elkhorn is our guest, and Tim, the other thing on that might be that if he does play well, then there's the possibility of a trade where a team that is maybe a player or two away in the NBA from challenging from an NBA championship might be interested in that salary that looks like nobody, you know, they can't trade him to anybody right now. It could increase his trade value too, couldn't it?
That's a very viable point, absolutely, because as you said, you know, if he plays well and he shows that he's healthy and he shows that he can be a major contributor, certainly it would open some eyes of other GMs and other coaches. No doubt about it, Kenny. That's a very valid point.
How about Darius Garland, too, getting picked for the select team? And I told JT this, and I know Colin led the team in points, and Colin's a very good scorer in the NBA, but I think it says something that the U.S. select team, they selected out of that backcourt Darius Garland to participate, this offseason in that. And to me, that means he's respected around the league with what he did this year, like you said earlier, and the potential that he has. How much could that help him being selected for that team?
Oh, it's going to help him a ton, guys. I mean, when you go out and you compete day in and day out with some of the best basketball players in the world, it's only going to make you better. What's the old saying? Steel sharpens steel. I mean,
right.
You go out there and you practice against the best and you learn from the best. And knowing DG, he's going to pick their brains a little bit. And he's going to study what they're doing. That's a huge honor for him, number one. But it's also a huge benefit to his game overall. He's going to really look at that as an opportunity, not just to be a special player, but to get better as a player. And DG has a great work ethic. We go all the way back to last September when the Cavs held their mini bubble after they weren't in the bubble down in Orlando, and people were raving about what he did as far as coming back off his rookie year. And they thought he could be set up for a big second year, and he didn't disappoint. He really grew by leaps and bounds.
Tim, this past season, the 76ers obviously come into the playoffs. They're the number one seed. But the Cavs, seemingly for whatever reason, were able to hang with that team, and they beat him a couple of times this past season. I want to know what your thoughts are on Ben Simmons. For everybody that says a guy can't shoot, what is the problem with Ben Simmons in Philadelphia? I don't even know if he played in all those games.
Well, there were times he was on the floor and it looked like he wasn't playing. I mean, he just disappeared. And, you know, really, in a way, I feel bad for Ben Simmons because he is an elite talent. I mean, he's a number one draft pick overall. And I would think right now this has really become a mental issue for Ben Simmons, the fact that he seems to have lost all confidence. When you have an open slam dunk and you give it up to a guy who's about to get double teamed and, you know, hammered on a shot attempt, that shows you that you've just lost all confidence. And listen, I'm not a GM. I'm not Doc Rivers. But they've often said that sometimes a change of scenery is just best. And maybe that'll be the case for Ben Simmons, because it seems as though right now his time in Philadelphia, he just seems to have really just lost it. And his teammates seems to have lost their confidence in him as well.
That's the bigger thing. Yeah, I agree with you there, Tim Alcorn. I know he and his agent, Rich Paul, who represents LeBron James, who represents Darius Garland, met with the brass of the Sixers today. So they had a sit-down to discuss his future, whether that's in Philadelphia or if they're going to be looking to try and trade him. So that'll be interesting to see what happens this offseason. I will say this. I'm not a Ben Simmons fan, okay? I wouldn't want him on the Cavaliers. That's me. But I got to give the guy, he's a three-time All-Star, he's a two-time first-team All-Defensive player, and he was Rookie of the Year. So there is something there, but if you can't shoot, not free throws, actually shoot the basketball right in the last two minutes and you can't play, you know, be in there, your coach has to take you out maybe, that's a major, major issue for a player, whether it's confidence or he just can't shoot, period, and that'll never change. So I'll stay as far away. I would keep Kevin Love over trading for Ben Simmons if you're asking me one
point
or the other.
That's not my point. I just wanted to know because you had seen these players, and you know, a team like the Cavaliers that could, for whatever reason, hang with the number one seed coming out of the East, but yet turns around and can't play with Sacramento. It didn't make any sense. It was such a Jekyll and Hyde season. And again, it goes back to everything. You know, pandemic, bad luck, injury, take your pick.
Well, first of all, the Sacramento, don't forget out in Sacramento, they got beat by a miracle shot at the guy threw the long inbounds pass and they hit the shot. But anyway, yeah, it was Jekyll and Hyde. But again, JT, I think injuries played a part in that. And again, you had, you know, the up and down nature of lineups. I think JB had 33 different lineups this year. So there was some Jekyll and Hyde. But I don't know. I don't remember who was the good and who was the bad. But whoever was the good, if it was Jekyll, I think that's what you build on. That's what you build on.
Right.
Because those were the flashes. Those were the moments where you said, this is what this team can be. And sometimes with a young team, you're going to take some lumps and you're going to ride that roller coaster ride. But, man, when you see it working, like you said, against teams like Philadelphia and against teams like Brooklyn when they were here, you see what it can be, and the potential really is exciting.
All right, Tim Alcorn, last thing, and we'll let you go here, unless you want to stay to get out of your household chores. That's up to you totally. The NBA Finals, who does Tim Alcorn like out of these four teams? None of us would have thunked it. Bucks, Hawks in the East, Suns, and Clippers in the West. Who do you like out of this group to win it all?
It wasn't the four that my thought would be left standing, I'll tell you that. And even though Atlanta got game one last night and Trae Young is just playing out of his mind, I still think Milwaukee will win that series. I do. I think they've knocked on the door a few times, and I think they'll bust it down this year. I think Milwaukee will get there. Boy, out west, I don't know. I think with Chris Paul coming back and who knows with the status of Kawhi, I'll lean towards Phoenix. I have to tell you, I'm rooting for Phoenix. I am. Al McCoy, their radio play-by-play guy, 88 years old.
Wow.
And he sounds like he's 38 when he calls the game. He's still at the top of his game. Interviewed him earlier this year. He's just awesome. So I'd love to see an 88-year-old guy get to the NBA Finals and call it for his home team. So I'll go with Phoenix and Milwaukee.
I'm rooting for Phoenix as well. I love Devin Booker's game.
I like Atlanta. Yeah.
I wanted Mikal Bridges over Colin Sexton a couple of years ago, that 3D guy, and he's playing a big role in what they do. DeAndre Ayton's coming into his own. That they're going to be a team to be reckoned with for years to come now.
Yeah, you didn't like Trae Young either, and he's a superstar. Tell him, Tim Alcorn. Tell him.
Trae Young is special. I mean, when you see what he's done in the playoffs, and he's racking up a lot of points, don't get me wrong, but he's dishing out dimes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wrong on him. I thought he was just a volume shooter scorer at Oklahoma, and it wouldn't translate to the NBA. So I was as wrong on him, Tim Alcorn, as Chris Grant was on Anthony Bennett.
Tim, I do want to ask you one last question, though, before we let you go. And that's, you know, going back to this Atlanta team, and I'm watching this Nate McMillan. You mentioned the fact that they had a slow start. They changed coaches. And for whatever reason, Nate McMillan seems to be the guy. They're going to have to take that interim tag off him because nobody expected him to be here. Can J.B. Bickerstaff be as good with a young lineup as Nate McMillan's been in this short stint with Atlanta?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Yes. I think you saw that when JB took over last season. And, you know, before the pandemic hit, Cavs were basically playing 500 basketball. And JB weathered a lot of storms this year, but he never lost that team. And they never wavered, and they never quit on him. Absolutely, yes, JT.
Good enough.
Let's hope so, Tim Alcorn. Hey, Timmy, thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk again as we get closer to the draft. All right, buddy?
Sounds good, my friend.